So I reiterate here, the bill is dead.
The story of this great city is about the years before this night.
We are free!
Hey everyone, this is Ho Ho Hong Kong, the podcast you're listening to right now. That's correct. Don't change the channel. You can't change the channel. It's a podcast.
There is a lot of stuff on Spotify now. People can actually just kind of change the channel.
But you don't really technically change the channel. That's the thing. You see, you don't have a remote to change the channel. And there's no real channel because like which is forward, which is back, right?
Yeah.
So technically, a podcast is a podcast. You do not have channels. You don't have a choice. Listen.
Fair.
Yeah. So again, in case you're curious and why you're listening to this podcast, is because I am your host, Vivek Malbani, and my co-host, who is...
Mohammed Magdi.
That's right. And stay tuned. We're going to be talking to you for an hour where either you love it or regret it, and you'll know exactly in 59 minutes time.
Before we get to actually this week, we have another guest. We're on a roll with the guests.
I'm telling you, man.
And I think in Australia, we'll be doing a few guests as well.
Yes, we will be. I'll be taking this mixer with me. In case immigration confiscates it, then there'll be no podcast.
Well, if the mixer is not made out of meat, you should be okay going to Australia.
Hey, you know what?
That's the only thing they freak out about.
They might change the policy and say like no meat, no nuts. And when they say nuts, could be like the nuts and bolts inside
this. Nuts and bolts, exactly.
So whatever works for there, you know.
One of my favorite things to watch now is Border Control Australia.
Oh, God.
Because they're so strict and there's so many episodes online.
Yeah.
And you just see them like catching like the craziest. It's just like old couple, like 80-year-old Spanish couple.
Yeah.
Who have no idea what's going on. And they forgot to like that they have like half a banana.
Yeah.
And then they're just like creating like a whole drama.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
And they're like crying. They're like, we didn't know. We're so
exactly.
sorry. They're like, do you know in Australia it's so illegal? I'm like, you guys are evil.
Yeah, right? Just
so
on purpose.
Yes.
I bet you one day they're going to like, catch me for all that little, whatever little powder in my suitcase. I'm like, that's dust.
Yeah.
They're like, no. It could be anything. We're going to test it. Yeah. So
like,
we got that.
It smells like cumin.
Exactly, right?
I'm like,
yeah, that's
actually,
that's a little cumin mixed in as well from my home, but whatever. All right. Hey, anyway. So as we said,
we have now a returning guest. Sarah Tung is back on the podcast.
Yay!
Hey, I was trying before the recording to figure out when were you on last, and I failed.
Ages ago.
Yeah,
ages,
it was during COVID, and it was Andy and me.
Yes. Gosh, it feels
we actually
like a
did two episodes.
Ago.
We did one with your podcast and one on ours.
Mm-hmm.
And I recall one being at your house. I don't remember the other one. Was it both in your house?
I think they were both in my house, and you and Andy were talking about sexual fantasies.
I have no memory of that, and I hope that episode is not out there.
Yeah. The only way girlfriends and wives would allow that is there's a mixer in the middle of this discussion.
Yes.
Otherwise, we're all in trouble right now.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, why are you discussing this stuff? I don't understand. This is not permitted at all.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
No, not at all. So, Sarah, welcome back. What have you been up to since COVID?
Oh my goodness.
You gotta catch up to our audience who have been listening for years.
Wow. I mean, it almost seems like a blur now, COVID. I feel like I've sort of like voided that chapter in my life.
Yeah,
from my
I think
memory.
Most of us have. We just like said it never happened, or if it did, I'm glad I blacked out for those 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. You know, COVID was pretty difficult for me, I would say. Like it was a lot of ups and downs and instability, and especially while I was trying to, you know, build my business as a coach, I think it was really tough, I think, mentally. So great thing is that I'm in a much better space now.
Nice.
Both in the stability, both mentally, financially, all of it, which is great.
But would you say COVID, during the few years of COVID, the pandemic, people were kind of stuck at home with minimum social contact. Would that actually be the precursor to really good business when COVID is lifted, when it's gone? Because like, I'm sure people were probably sexually frustrated, or they were figuring out that I can't even pleasure myself anymore, something like that. Did you notice a lot of those things thanks to COVID?
I think what I really noticed was that with COVID, I call it the biggest accelerator of relationships. It just meant that if your relationship was going badly, it would have multiplied it 10 times. And that's why you would see people getting divorced and having huge amounts of conflict. But if your relationship, you know, there was any kind of spark and you were kind of doing well, COVID also multiplied that because people would like move in together after like a month. And they would just become
because
incredibly,
the government told them to.
Exactly. But they would come incredibly close and intimate, right? Because everybody was just kind of lost and like finding their way and had to like rely on each other. So that's what I noticed in terms of relationships. In terms of sex life, to be honest, I don't think COVID was a very sexy time.
I mean, you would actually think, I'm a little surprised that you said it wasn't good for you or your business because you would think people being stuck together means they're banging more. That means, hey, let's call Sarah and get ideas or whatever.
Yeah, like they run out of their own ideas, that like we need some inspiration or we're getting frustrated. Like somehow he's
just
not working
on
with
paper,
me.
It sounds like you should be, that should be your, the boom. But
You would think that.
Yeah, exactly. So what happened?
I think what happened was the dissolving of boundaries between work and home. And the fact that people were together all the time meant that actually the sex drive goes down in a lot of those circumstances, because when you see somebody 24/7 in your pajamas, in the most unsexy kind of situations, then sex, which is often based on desire, and desire often means that there needs to be a little bit of space between you, because you want somebody.
Yeah.
You want something.
Yeah, it's having access to your favorite dessert all the time.
At the buffet after a while, like, I don't want any more tiramisu. Right. I'm good. Yeah.
Exactly. So then actually the sex drive goes down. Mm. And you're right in that you have to be then extra creative to come up with ways to keep things interesting. And I do believe that the people that I did work with at that time, that was often the situation that they were coming
with. They just want to keep things interesting.
They were trying their best to keep things interesting, but it was a very unsexy time and there was a lot of low libido.
I'm curious though. Let's put it this way. Let's say we were in the situation where we're with our partners for 24 hours every single day. Mm-hmm. We can't go anywhere. Technically, I mean, they will go to the supermarket. That's the only time. I'm like, I'm desiring you.
Yeah.
Like, what would be your first instinctive thing to kind of create the creativity, like do the creativity? What would you do?
I would just go out in nature. I would just go far away from home, like as far as I can go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just
I'm saying let's make it really strong, as in like you can't even leave the house. What would be your method? Like for me, I think the best thing I would do, I'd be like, all right, what is your hobby? And let's say my girlfriend says, I like playing video games. I'm like, you are going to be in this corner for the next 7 hours. Okay. And at least that way she's satisfied, as I'm doing what I enjoy, but I don't have to see you. And hopefully we do our own thing. And then when the night comes, we're like, hey, I haven't seen you for a while. You know what? How was the game?
That's a fun idea. Yeah. I was not in this situation, so it's kind of hard for me to imagine, but I think I would do something similar. It's like, hey, we're going to watch movies, but separately.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you watch your own movie. Yeah. I'm just going to binge watch Netflix in the room.
Yeah.
Watch your own whatever.
Yeah.
And we'll catch up in 5 hours.
Yeah.
And knowing me, I would actually have a meeting with my girlfriend and be like, all right, what
that
movie?
That is the most perfect answer, by the way.
I'd be like, okay, what movie are you watching? Because I definitely do not want to, watch the same movie as you. Yeah. Otherwise, you're like, oh, I saw it.
Nothing to talk about.
And number two, the most important thing, I think a lot of people made the mistake, is that if you want to do what you said, is where you watch two different movies at the same time, you have to upgrade your Netflix account, because some of them doesn't allow simultaneous streaming.
Yeah, which actually you would prefer getting COVID 15 times than
upgrade that.
$10 extra.
I'd be like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'll look at
for your own girlfriend.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm like, I'm sorry. Yeah. This is a temporary issue. I'm not paying this extra monthly fee for a whole year down just so you can watch a movie that I don't want to watch. Come on, man. Okay, so that would be like your way to just get out and go to nature.
Yeah, I would just go to, which actually I did do a lot. Like, luckily we were still a little lucky. Like, obviously, like, quarantine was really strong for like traveling, but Hong Kong was never actually fully closed.
Yeah,
like I went to Sai Kung was my place during COVID. I would just go every other week and go like camp out on Thailand 1 for like 4 days with the dog. It was great.
I remember you saying that on my podcast, actually. Yeah.
It was awesome.
It was one of the fantasies that you had. You were like, oh, tent sex. Camping.
Yeah.
Sex while camping.
Yeah.
That's true, actually, because like you kind of have this excitement of you're somewhere alone.
Yeah.
But at any moment, you might have this killer who's running loose.
Which actually did happen. We were attacked by a boar in the middle of the night.
Technically a killer.
Yeah. The boar was just looking for food.
Right.
And it was like shaking the tent and stuff. And luckily, my vicious dog like actually like chased him away.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that made you want to have sex after that?
Absolutely not. It was all dead. Whatever was there was just...
There's no more mood.
I was on high alert after that. You're not like, the good kind.
Yeah, one eye's peeking up and like, is the boar back?
Exactly.
Is the boar back, you know what I mean? Well, fair enough. I can totally understand like during COVID time, as you said, that we're seeing the same person the whole time. And it's very true because like, a lot of married couples have this issue, right? Where you live together and it's great. And then after a while, like the reality of life comes in, like, oh, have you done this chore? Are you taking care of that? And then it comes to become like, oh, we literally have to schedule in this kind of intimate time and everything, right? I mean, I see that with my own schedule as well very often where like, first of all, just to even hang out with my girlfriend, I'm like, all right, what day of the week at what time am I meeting you where for this to even work out?
Yeah.
Let alone have a moment like, ooh, I'm in the mood, you know?
I feel like you, after 7 years, you have not seen him do stand-up before Sarah, but he has...
My frustration level keeps him increasing.
Yeah, exactly. As you watch him over the years, it's just like one of the things that he has now is just how long he's been with his girlfriend and how much they don't care about each other anymore.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I feel like you would watch this, be like, I should sign them up.
Yeah. This guy needs extreme coaching.
Right.
Yeah. It's bizarre because like as much as I make fun of this whole thing, it's like after a few days, I'm like, okay, I wouldn't mind seeing her every now and then.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I have that. But so I
next agree. To the gym appointment. And,
exactly.
And
I can slaughter in between.
Dog.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can slaughter in between 4 and 5. Yeah. You know, do you have your lunch break at that time? I can say hi to you and just sit down and ask how your day was.
Yeah.
But then, okay, so coming back to this thing, so you have created a course where you're trying to encourage people to basically not just be like, oh, sexually healthy, but also embrace the idea that this is something to enjoy, right?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit more about that? Because like when we were growing up, the only thing about sex education is usually like, here's a banana. This is the thing you want to put this on the banana. And that was the whole thing. It was like, all right, now, you know, go out and have fun.
Well, at least you got the banana.
No, we get nothing. And I think in Singapore, you don't get much. We talked about this before.
I got the
slap?
No.
The person.
I got all of the sort of the genital warts
pictures.
And say, this is what's going to happen to you when you have sex.
Yeah.
Here's all the sores from herpes and the warts.
Oh, no.
And it was fun.
Wow. I mean, I can imagine like after that lesson, you go back home and tell your parents, like, man, you got lucky. You got lucky. Instead of you getting this, you got this.
Yeah.
You know, you can point at yourself. And they're like, technically kind of a disease to us as well, you know?
Mm.
So you have that. Okay, I mean, it's like, because I went to an all-boys school, right? So sex education really was not taught in school, per se. You would learn it on your own.
Mm.
And by learn it on your own, it was like through magazines or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would have this idea of like, this is what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
And then almost every guy after like 10 years looks back and be like, I have still yet to find exactly what that magazine claims is going to be like, right? So have you had a lot of people where they're never satisfied and therefore they're getting frustrated because they're just getting a point like, oh, this is not what it is. I don't care anymore.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of those people are my clients.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Very honest. And I mean, I've worked with women, I've worked with men, but to be honest, not having a good sex education, and I think from what I hear, not all three of us had a terrible sex education or very limited.
I grew up in a very conservative country, so that was like, there was barely any.
It has a profound impact, I think, on the sex life and on the way that you experience pleasure, on intimacy.
I'm guessing this because like the way you associate it then with your upbringing, what they make you, and then at that impressionable age, you automatically, that becomes the attachment of this is what it's equal to, right?
Well, because they never really teach you about pleasure, right?
Yeah.
So sex education is not about pleasure. It's about mechanics.
Yeah.
It's about reproduction.
Yes.
And it's about, well, in my case at least, it was about fear and
shame.
Yeah.
Right? All of those things.
Fear for us was the big one, for sure.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It was all like, it's basically approaching the topic itself was just surrounded by fear. So it's like, even if you want to talk about it as a teenager or whatever, you just have to talk, like whisper to your friend or whatever.
I'm really curious, like who started this whole fear trend, you know? Like, I'm sure someone probably wasn't getting any. And they're like, there's a way I'm going to stop you wanting to get some.
Yeah.
It's one of those people with a really pessimistic mindset.
I mean, it must have been someone who was pretty depressed for whatever reason, as you said. Like, someone is not getting any, like... Yeah. I'm going to try to start telling people that if they do this, they would be...
You've
turned to toads or whatever. I don't even know what is that.
I bet you that person was a mentalist. Just to start things off, they were like, I can read their minds. They're having too much fun. I will find a way to twist this around. And like without people realizing, they're like, I don't know why, but after talking to you, I just want to go home and cry. It's like, this guy, he's like, all right, this is working for me.
Yeah,
I'm sure that was the beginning, because like, I would say there was no reason for the shame, but I guess maybe it was getting out of hand where people were so... It's kind of like saying you were always like enjoying life and to the point that you just like forgot to do your actual work. So I'm guessing what must have happened, right? This is my purely no research idea of what must have happened. A landlord wasn't getting his rent paid, okay? He knocks on the apartment that he owns, and only he hears banging, and he's like, oh my god, they're gonna destroy the apartment, what's going on, right? He goes and he's like, you guys are fucking... he's like, hey, excuse me, I'm out here trying to bust my balls, make some money and everything, and you guys are just having sex, don't pay me my rent. And then the landlord has go consult his feng shui master. Feng shui master says, you know, you put this gold item over here and all that stuff. Landlord was like, that's too expensive. I will do the psychological tactic. Went in their clause was like, no banging allowed. And then these people took like, oh my god, we can't even live anymore. You know,
so my favorite thing about this is that I know where the reference comes from. It's just like, now because you're in between like renovating an apartment, actually this is your jokes reference are going straight to landlord. Just buying another apartment and it's like a complete
mess.
That's
all I can think of. Like the only thing I can think of, like hammers and nails. That's the closest I can get to banging. That's it.
Well, you're not that far off from the topic, hammers and nails.
Exactly. Yeah. So tell me, okay, so you have the course, you designed the course, and can we learn a bit more about the course? All about?
Okay, yes. So I guess I should have probably mentioned that earlier when you were asking me what I've been up to since COVID.
Right.
I have also designed a course, which clearly you know about. But yes, I've been busy doing this online course, and the course itself is called Own Your O, The Shame-Free Guide to Self-Pleasure. It's hosted on the website of a sexual wellness brand called Nancy. And I created it really to help women to, well, in the name, Own Your O, to really take ownership of their sexual pleasure. So that means to become more confident, more empowered in the bedroom, and have that lead to more fulfilling sex and O's, I guess. And actually, I've always wanted to create an online course because I had such an awful sex education.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to plug the gaps that I feel I had around female sexuality.
Plug the gaps could have also been the name of the course.
So that's the
We're looking at your course now at hellonancy.com.
Yes.
We'll do all the plugs at the end. Keep going.
Okay, thanks. And well, I think female sexuality as a topic is really not very well understood.
Yeah.
And even by women themselves, which is more the pity.
Unless I'm a male politician, then I somehow know everything about it. Right.
Yeah, and I think it's very easy because there's so many conflicting social narratives out there for women about sex. There's a lot of double standards out there. It's actually very easy to feel quite confused and lost. And there's also very so little sex education, right?
Yeah.
So put that all together in a cocktail.
So this reads a little bit to me like a masterclass. For someone who knows nothing about the topic, if I'm reading it also seems like it focuses on self-pleasure, as you said.
Yes, it does.
So basically masturbation of sorts.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Why did you choose that as opposed to doing a masterclass about regular sex?
Okay, because I think that self-pleasure is the foundation for all sexual pleasure. So for all regular sex, because if you don't master self-pleasure, then you know, you don't really own your own sexuality. You know, you can't define it for yourself. You don't know what you really enjoy for yourself. So you have to actually explore that first. Mm. And then you take whatever you learn and then you bring it to
tell the other person, yeah. Do that.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. You're like, watch this video I recorded myself.
Yeah.
And imitate my this. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, fair.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Like, yeah, I mean, you think about when you're on a plane for emergency, they tell you put on your oxygen mask first, right?
Right, right.
You don't go around mm-hmm. helping everyone breathe. You're like, buddy, breathe first and then figure everyone
there you
else
go.
Out.
You can yeah. you can use that for the course.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
tell you to put on your oxygen.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how, what is the fastest
that's
way to
free
die?
For you. Exactly. Take it home.
Yeah, yeah.
The oxygen mask. In case of an emergency of a break, up quickly, go on self pleasure first, and then come back and argue later on.
That should
hey,
be
that might actually
course.
That might actually change a lot because like maybe yeah. for all you know, it's just a certain frustration built up
yeah.
that you don't realize, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think so. That's also very true. Now, what I have noticed that people as they grow and change in general, the type of self pleasure obviously is different. Mm-hmm. You know, as a teenager versus as an adult versus mm-hmm. like you know, as a parent,
mm-hmm.
right? So, would you say there are more and more people throughout their lives you will see it goes from a pleasure thing to a thing of like, we need to do this for this reason. Like, you get my point? Like, for example, some people are like, oh, we have to spend quality time together because it's good for the relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that, oh, I really want to spend time. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, we need to do this to sustain this. Mm-hmm. Do you notice a lot of that trend
mm-hmm.
where people are coming to you and they're like, oh, we see it as a chore where we're trying to tick it off once a week?
Yeah.
Is that also an issue that you're finding very often that's ruining the enjoyment of the whole thing?
Yes. But that, I think, refers more to sex with a partner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think with self-pleasure, often, if you have a good self-pleasure relationship with yourself,
yeah.
actually that can be remarkably consistent all through the stages of life.
Mm.
It's, you know, whether you're with a partner, without a partner, it's actually something that can be extremely fulfilling, you know. It's almost like, I think it's the greatest gift that you can give to yourself.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
It's something that doesn't necessarily become a chore necessarily either. I hear more that, yes, in a relationship, sometimes it becomes a chore because, you know, different people have like different libidos and it's mismatched. And then now, okay, my partner wants to have sex more than me. And
yeah.
then, you know, I'm very busy. I'm very stressed. I want to have sex all the time. And, you know, often that will fluctuate over a long-term relationship. So I feel like that's the difference.
Okay. So Mo, tell me, what's your self-pleasuring habit?
I don't have any.
You don't have a habit?
No.
So technically, yeah, I mean, it's not a habit. We don't have like, you know, a to-do list every day. Like, every 3 days, mm-hmm. I've got to take care of this, right?
Yeah.
But then reverse
it. I don't find it like, as maybe you have heard that before from yeah. other people, just like it doesn't feel anywhere close to the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm like, I don't find it interesting.
Have you ever tried mm-hmm. sitting on your hand first? Make you fall asleep.
I have not, but I'm too lightweight. So even like I know where you're going with that,
yeah.
which is like making your hand numb. So
yeah.
But I'm too lightweight to actually make my hand. Maybe I can put my hand under something, under my fridge or whatever,
and then
try that again.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. There are a lot of tools on the market, Bo, that can help you with this.
But I don't know. I feel like for men, it is like, obviously for women, there is more, I'm talking traditionally speaking, there's a lot more toys, like there is like more fun stuff to do as opposed to men self-pleasuring where it's kind of limited.
But would you say, so what I've noticed is that, as you say, the shame part really comes from female more than males. I think with society in general, right? Mm. The idea of like the guy that has a lot of sex is the jock and the lady that has a lot of sex is the slut kind of thing where it's an automatic feeling of like, oh, I shouldn't be doing this
because,
you know, I identify as female. And therefore, I shouldn't. But then, deep down inside, we're still animals or humans. You know, we're still beings where we all have to have. I always feel that there's a certain thing where we have to fulfill this, let's say, tank in a certain way. Mm-hmm. Just as that society in general allows guys in general to be like, oh yeah, you know, you're going out, that's no big deal. You get it?
But I mean, going off the same thing, it's also we're the only animals who do it for pleasure.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. I mean, I think like
no,
maybe like dolphins or something. There's a couple of species. I'm saying in general.
Have you seen dogs, you know? Man?
Yeah.
They like the humping of the leg. I don't think
they still want to reproduce.
I mean, I see. What, so with
yeah,
the intention
yeah.
of reproduction, but
yes,
they don't realize
intention.
Your leg can't get pregnant.
Yes, yes.
Ah,
yeah,
I thought
saying,
the humping was just purely because they're like, I mean, this is a leg. I like the hair, you know. They were there with
I think the humping as a dog owner, the humping is still like, can I make babies?
Oh.
Yeah, or puppies.
Okay. Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah.
So then, yeah.
But back to your topic about double standards.
Yeah.
And how that does create a lot of shame. So let me just very quickly just define what shame is, really. It's really this feeling of unworthiness or humiliation that comes with the perception that you're doing something dirty or wrong or immoral, right? And so there's many, many things that can contribute to this because like nobody's actually born with shame.
Yeah.
We actually just pick it up along the way, and we pick it up by, you know, from society, like things like the double standards that you mentioned.
Parents, usually very powerful.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
I agree. I had Asian parents. I had religious parents. So yeah. I picked up my shame definitely also from my family. So you pick it up from all around you. And therefore, I think it's... And some people really internalize this really at such a deep level that they don't really understand often why they do this, why they do the things that they do in their sex life. They just know that, you know, they're either very passive or very embarrassed about something. And I'll give you actually an example from my own life, right? Because as I mentioned, I grew up very conservative and very religious, terrible sex education. And that showed up for me in the idea that I just really didn't really have much of a voice in the bedroom. I was very passive.
So you say you were very passive as in you thought that you had no right to speak?
Yeah,
or?
I didn't really feel like I had much of a right to speak. And I'll give you an example of this. I would always put my partner's pleasure over my own as well. I think because I looked for validation often, you know.
That you're worthy, yeah.
Exactly, that I was worthy and that I was trying to seek validation and so there were a few things that from my experience, I will show you how shame showed up. One of the things is that when I first started becoming sexually active, and that was like in my teens and early 20s, you know, a lot of those early sexual encounters for me were unprotected, right? And this is, and the reason why would be when that my partner or a guy would tell me, oh, I don't want to use a condom because it doesn't feel good. I would just go along with it for some reason. And you know, honestly, it took me a really long time to figure this out, why I was doing it. Because I did want to protect myself from STIs.
So you knew about safe sex.
I knew about safe sex. Not that I didn't want to, but I would...
You felt like you just would...
Correct.
Yeah.
I just always looked, as I said, because I was looking for validation from them, I kind of shied away from confrontation. I just ended up in a lot of these, like what I was called like compromising sexual situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Similarly, if I was having sex and it just wasn't comfortable for me, let's just say like I wasn't warmed up enough.
Yeah.
I, you know, it just felt like uncomfortable. I would never say anything because I just thought, you know, that...
That's your problem. You deal with it.
Correct.
How dare I? Yeah, yeah.
Correct.
It must be you. It's never
it's your issue.
The other person.
Yes. And I think fundamentally, it took me quite a long time to figure this out, honestly. But it was really because I felt so ashamed of actually having sex before marriage at all. So the fact that I was doing this at all, I just was, you know, I didn't want to take pleasure in it. You know, I felt bad taking too much pleasure.
So that's where it comes down to. It's actually the fact that you know deep down you're doing something wrong.
Correct.
So you can't enjoy the wrong you're doing.
I couldn't really enjoy it. I was always kind of overthinking it. You know, in the so unprotected sex example, you know, I couldn't even bring myself to go to like the 7-Eleven to buy condoms for myself, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because
they make great balloons. You should have bought it for yourself.
I should have.
Yeah.
But I couldn't bring myself because I couldn't even accept the fact that I was actually even having sex.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't even take those precautions. And then, of course, in the moment when my partner would say, "Oh, I don't really want to have a, condom. Yeah, I don't want to use one. You don't have one. Okay, that's fine. Let's just go ahead with it."
Yeah.
Then, you know, then I would be, you know, I wouldn't have any other, I wouldn't even have the voice to really just say no as well.
See, that's the thing I think they should teach in school is not the sex education, it's the buying of the condoms. Because that itself is difficult, you know?
Yeah.
Like everyone has their own little strategy, you know? Like, because first of all, I really appreciate how supermarkets put them near the counter.
Yeah.
So like while they're beeping everything else, you're like quickly, quick, you know, you put it in. And that's the first thing that you just tuck into your bag and everything.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's very true. Because like, I'm sure everybody at some point still needs to get taught that you should be proud that you are buying this, telling the world that, hey, you know what? I'm a responsible person.
Yeah.
Whereas like, because of the shame, you're just like, oh, this is associating with that item, which is shameful. So
I feel like it's also like maybe they should have more discreet packaging for like an option for discreet packaging. I'm not even joking. Like make it look like chewing gum or whatever. So for people who are a little bit more shy in public,
yeah,
they don't all have to be like, "Hey, look at me! I tell you what, condoms. They should do." It can be like, "Hey, I'm buying this thing."
It should be a box that says, "Thank you for your donation," and put like a random charity logo on it, so you look like, "Hey, everyone, look at me! Look at me saving the world one step at a time."
You're right.
Thank you for coming.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Thank you for your donation. Yeah. Your giving. You know.
And you're right. And then the worst thing about merchandising for condoms is that, you know, in 7-Eleven, the condoms are always like right at the counter.
Yeah.
And like, you know, little 18-year-old me. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, I gotta go look them in the eye and like pick it up and like they're looking at you.
Yeah, have to buy like 15 other like candies and put it in the middle and a few lighters and stuff. You're like,
whatever's near the counter. And they get you with like the expensive chips that are gonna expire tomorrow. You're like, put it there, but just cover it. Yeah.
And I always thought that for some reason, I always thought, you know, it's only the slutty women that carry condoms around.
Yeah, correct.
So to your double standard thing, that's what I thought as well.
Yeah.
The women who are having a lot of sex, and I just didn't see myself that way. So I guess like this is just like an example of how shame can kind of like show up in your sex life.
Okay, so you were going through this phase that, you know, shameful and everything. Was there some situation that suddenly surprised you and you're like, wait, what? Like, for example, let's say you were with a guy and he's like, "Oh, you have a condom?" And you're like, "No." He's like, "Well, we're not doing it." You're like, "What?" Have you ever had like those twists? You're like, "I'm sorry, are you being responsible for me? Are you being okay with it?" Have you encountered those situations where you're like, "Whoa, you mean my pleasure and worthiness is actually something you would value?"
Right, so the first time you met someone who's actually respectful or like,
I mean,
pays more attention to you than your average guy.
Yeah, I mean, of course I mean, not all guys are like that.
Yeah, right? Don't worry. We're guys our whole lives. I looked myself in the mirror before.
Yeah.
Of course, I met guys that were respectful.
I guess his question is more like, how did you feel the first time?
Yeah.
That moment.
You get it? Because like, you'd always been putting their priorities first. Mm. And then the first time when the guy was like, no, Sarah, like, I want to do this. You're like, no, you shouldn't need to. He's like, no.
Mm-hmm. It's for you.
It's for both of us. You're like, oh my God, what? What does this goes against everything I've been told?
But you know, in that situation, again, I think back that I was pretty, also I would just be so confused because I remember, you know, guys that were actually very concerned about my pleasure and they would ask me, "Okay, so what do you like in the bedroom? You know, can I do this? Can I do that?" And I would always struggle to answer.
You don't want to admit it?
Because again, the shame, but also because I didn't really understand what I liked, right? I didn't know what I liked.
You never explored it, basically.
I never really explored
it. You never, quote-unquote, owned your O.
I never owned my O, exactly.
Right.
And so then I would be, I'd almost like not want them to ask me.
And were you actually not self-pleasuring at the time as well? Was that part of the problem, is that you didn't know your own body that well to communicate it to someone else?
I actually was self-pleasuring. I actually started self-pleasuring from a very young age. I just felt very bad about it.
Right.
And so
you just wouldn't communicate it to someone.
No.
Even if someone was like, "No, it's okay, tell me." You're like, no. You feel like it's a trap.
Yeah. If anything, I would say, if a guy would ask me, "Oh, you know, what do you like?" I would just say, "Oh, anything that you're doing."
Right.
You know,
right.
Which is like the ultimate cop-out answer.
Yeah, yeah. The guy's like, "Ugh."
Yeah. But I was actually self-pleasuring from a young age. I just did it very furtively and I felt immensely bad about it. I mean, other stories about how I used to pray as well for forgiveness from God.
So after. Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, I can totally understand, because like before you pray, all the instincts are coming in. You're like, you know what? I just want to do this. And when you're done and you're calm, you're like, oh, crap.
Well, also as a Singaporean, same like Hong Kong people, is like very efficient.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to get it done quickly as possible, and then like it's not about the process, just about the destination. Really.
Exactly. Yeah. Get the job done.
Interestingly,
I mean, I think for men, you know, actually maybe to pick up on something that you mentioned earlier, right? Because you said that for you, self pleasure has never really been that interesting,
right?
And it is, I think, for men often the case that it's really just a rush to the finish line.
Mm.
And so therefore, there's not a lot of pleasure to it. It's just like a means to an end.
But I think the problem with a lot of men is the reason for the rush to the finish line, we've always been kind of trained from a young age of like any moment they could open the door.
Yes.
Which is why I gotta do it. Yeah. It's okay.
So often when I work with men, and one of the most common situations that they come to me for is premature ejaculation.
Yeah. Mm.
And we'll trace back to that exact situation that you're describing. Often the rush to the finish line has caused them, it's kind of conditioned their bodies.
Yeah, your brain is telling you
get it over with.
Yeah.
So often we actually use self-pleasure as a tool to change that habit. So, and often the exercise that I will give men is to actually masturbate, but really try something we call like edging. So it's
almost getting there.
Yeah,
and like
almost
stopping.
Getting there, stopping, and then almost getting there again and stopping. Mm. And then, you know, if orgasm is a 10 and, you know, being non-aroused is 0, it's like you want to almost get yourself to like a 7 or 8 and then you want to go back down to a 5 and then you go back to a 7 or 8, you know, maybe even a 9 and then go back down to a 5 and almost like recondition your body to this kind of arousal pattern as opposed to going from 0 to 10, 0 to 10, 0 to 10, that's it. And that's actually where self-pleasure can be a tool for you to change your habits and re-explore pleasure. So it's not necessarily as straightforward as, let's just get it over as quickly as possible.
So is this information in your online guide, the Own Your Own Masterclass?
No, it's not. That's my next class for men.
Yeah,
maybe.
This one is for women.
This class is for women.
Okay. So this is more focused on women. But if there were men that wanted help, then I'm guessing that's where the coaching comes in.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, well,
is it a good gift from a man to their partner, you think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I always say that the course is primarily for women who want to become more confident and empowered in the bedroom. However, I think anyone with an interest in female sexuality is going to benefit. So even if you are a man who is the partner of a woman, I think you would benefit from it. But I also think it is a great gift for men, for their wives, for their partners, for their lovers, because ultimately you want to have a happier, healthier, more empowered woman in the bedroom.
If I get it, can I still like use the same access and give it to someone else?
Share passwords?
Yeah, I share passwords. can I Netflix my way through your course?
Yeah, I'm sure you could.
Because it doesn't make sense. If I want to buy it for her, but I want to take a look, I'm not going to buy another course.
Right, so let me tell you this, though. I just thought of a great idea for when you should use this. If you ever have an office party and you have a Secret Santa kind of gift thing, this would be the ultimate one. That's one option.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other one is just before you quit a job and on your last day, go to that boss that you hate so much or, you know, is always fed up with you, always yelling at you and be like, you need this course. And just walk out of the room. You know? Well, that'd be so good, you know. Like, there's so many ways to gift this, because I really also feel the other thing is that for someone to go here and buy it, they have to come to terms with themselves and say like, I need help.
Yeah.
It's much like the alcoholic, much like, let's say, the person who's like struggling mentally. Yeah. They have to first acknowledge that I do need the help and then be willing to go there. But usually if someone can tell you, like, hey, you know what? I think you could really benefit from this. Go for it.
Well, okay.
That makes a big jump, you know, because yeah. I really feel like if I were a woman myself, or even if a guy, like, I'd be like, oh, my ego is like, no, I'm not going to admit I'm fine. I'm right, okay. Right. And also, I'm sure a lot of women, just like you said, would probably have that feeling of like, oh, you know what? It's okay. You know, I'm not, I don't need all this good stuff in my life. I'm fine. You know, I have a roof over my head. It's fine. And they keep, because I find, especially in Asia, we keep trying to tell ourselves that, no, you know, it's okay. You know, I'm sure all these generations never did it well. So what's going to change now? What's the difference? You know, my grandmom didn't, you know. And I think what you're suggesting is that it's like saying in our whole lives we've, you know, just used letters and envelopes, right? But now there's email. And the person is like, no, but all the generations have been using letters. It's like, yeah, I know, but you're missing out on this big thing about life. When you have email, like, it's going to change everything for you.
Yeah.
You get it? Would you say it's something like that where, okay, let's put it this way. Someone who is on, in many ways never really been confident or comfortable with the sexuality probably doesn't even realize what they're missing out. And which I'm guessing this course touches upon, we're explaining to them not just the mental side, like no shame, but also realize there's a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It's not just that one way of like, oh, I just got to stuff it in. You know, there's a lot of ways to enjoy the whole thing. Because I agree with you, the whole point of like, even like with sex and everything, if you actually read up a lot of literature, it actually talks about how the objective is not really reproduction only. There's a lot more to it, right? From just a scientific point of view, just the activity, just the moments you're spending time together, the intimacy and everything. And I'm sure a lot of people don't realize that the time they spend for the, with themselves, much like, let's say, is like, you know, let's say mindfulness, meditation. In a way, they're like, that's a moment for you, for yourself. This in a way is a moment for you, for yourself. Just like the person who has a tub of ice cream, like, this is my me time, you know. So this would be the same thing, right?
Yeah. So I think, okay, if I wanted to gift this course to somebody, I wouldn't necessarily approach it in that, okay, you have a problem.
Right. Yeah.
So therefore you need this course.
Yeah, because you put them on the defense.
Exactly.
Like, wait,
what are you trying to say?
I think what I would do is really talk about actually just more, I would just focus on the benefits of sexual pleasure, because maybe sometimes people don't really understand the profound impact that pleasure can have in their lives, right?
Yeah.
So, well, firstly, if you look at relationships, of course, you know, sexual pleasure can really bring you closer together. You have a deeper level of intimacy. But okay, let's just say you're not even in a relationship. You know, how can sexual pleasure, you know, contribute to your life? It actually can make you just like healthier, even if you want to just look from a health and well-being point of view. The impact that orgasms can have on your everything, from your blood pressure to your cortisol level to your, you know, sleep, to your immune system.
Yeah, that is for sure.
I mean, just as a sort of a health and well-being thing, it can have profound benefits there as well. But then also things like, you know, feeling confident in your body. You know, if there's a part of your body that you feel, you know, ashamed, and I grew up personally with a lot of genital shame, for example, because, and part of it I realize is because I think my mom started me off on like scented panty liners, and I know there's going to be lots of jokes about this later, but but you know, from a very young age, my mom would give me you know, scented panty liners, and she would say like, look, you know, you got to do something about, you know, how it smells down there.
But so she did this purely just to create this fear in you, or she herself was judging you?
I think she did it out of loving intentions.
Yeah, I feel like it would be out of love. Yeah.
Because she wanted me to feel clean and
smell.
Fresh.
Yeah.
And not smell. I know.
No, it's very fair. It's like, yeah, like it's someone coming
like
up to me.
If your dad gives you a deodorant or whatever.
Yeah,
that's like,
buddy, you're going to need
it. Like,
you know?
Yeah.
But I think, again, it's just that association. When you get deodorant, like, man, because all the ads are different.
Yeah.
You know, ads, body spray, like, all right, you're a man. You do that.
Those ads don't really exist.
Yeah.
Stinky fanny, please.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
But just to finish that point, right? Like, you know, again, that also had a big impact on my sex life, right?
Of course.
Because when you feel like, okay, you're ashamed of your genitals, then you don't want anybody to be going down there.
Yeah.
You don't want yourself. You don't even really want to look at yourself down there or explore down there yourself. And
I'm sure it also creates that fear in yourself, thinking that I have the problem. Everyone else is fine, just I have an issue.
Contributes to a cycle of shame as well.
And again, like when you start to learn about the truth about your body, about the, you know, when you start to debunk these myths and when you remove that shame, you know, again, it's very profound, but you just show up differently. When you remove this kind of body shame from yourself, you show up completely differently. You're just a lot more empowered, a lot more unapologetic. Mm. You hold yourself differently. It's hard to explain exactly, you know, what the benefit
I can imagine.
I can totally see.
Yeah. I'm going to put my annoying journalist slash radio host hat on and ask you to actually give us a sneak peek that is not on the promos, that is not like basically a bit of the course, that when people actually do pay... Aside from the general topics, let's dive in on one particular thing that you talk about and give us an exclusive.
And I tell you what, we'll make you do, like, let's say whoever's listening right now, right? And you hear Sarah talk about this. If let's say she says something, you're like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Immediately stop everything you're doing, go to hellonancy.com and search for Own Your O, because that is clearly you're on roll for like something you enjoy. Right? So that'll be a good idea
also,
as well.
Yeah, it'll be in the episode description below.
Yeah, so exactly. But pause the episode, go check it out over there as well. But yeah, okay, so the one little thing as Mo's suggesting is that could you give us a little sneak preview of something that you do touch upon? Yeah, other than yourself, obviously, in the
nice.
Yeah.
I don't believe there is you touching yourself in the course, just to set expectations.
No,
it's not there.
That's okay, but let me very quickly just give you a quick description of what is in the course and how it's structured.
Right.
So,
but then I will still want,
and I will give you the sneak peek. I promise. Okay. So there's like three main sort of sections. The first is where we go into sort of an introduction into the foundational concepts of female sexuality. So that includes things like the anatomy, arousal patterns, and so on. The second part is about kind of exploring what blocks pleasure. So things like myths and misconceptions. We talk about shame and how to techniques of how to overcome shame. And then the third section is really about giving you these practical hands-on techniques to actually use masturbation to empower yourself. Okay, sneak peek. I think one of the most interesting parts of the course, at least from the students who have taken it already, is the section that around myths and misconceptions, because there are a lot of myths and misconceptions around female sexuality, and often you hear about them so often that they are accepted as truth almost. So one of the myths that I go into is the myth that female orgasm is complicated or elusive.
Ah,
yes,
so that's a myth. Okay. Good to know.
Yeah,
I thought you were gonna go with the masturbation cause you to be blind.
Because my palms are pretty all right.
Yes, and I mean that's a huge myth, and I think a lot of people think that and they accept that as truth, right? And they think, oh yeah, of course, female orgasm is, you know, it's kind of hard, it's complicated. You know, you got to do lots of things. However, I think the reason, and what I do is in the course is to explain, firstly, the reason behind the myth. And the reason behind the myth is because female orgasm is often compared to male orgasm.
Right.
And I think when you compare female orgasm to male orgasm, then in many
and
ways...
And relativity, yes.
Yes, in many ways, it can seem to be more complicated or elusive because there is something called the orgasm gap in the scientific literature around sex. And the orgasm gap essentially says that in a typical heterosexual encounter, about 95% of men will have an orgasm, whereas only about 55% or 65% of women.
That's still better than the pay gap.
Will.
Yeah, that's very true.
I think there's lots of gaps. But bedroom, boardroom, all over the place. Yeah. And I think that leads a lot of people to conclude incorrectly that, oh yeah, that's because female orgasm is complicated, because yeah, men can come so easily, so quickly,
straightforward.
So straightforward, and women, you know, who knows whether they'll come 50-50. And I think in the course, we actually, in the first section of the course, we talk about the arousal patterns of men and women. And I think you will find out in that part of the course that the arousal pattern for women is that women actually take longer to actually hit their peak arousal. And they require stimulation, proper stimulation.
Candles, gifts, all kinds of stuff.
Candles, gifts, Exactly,
I think that's the thing, right? It's a multi-dimensional experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Versus the guy was like, oh, let's just do that.
Yeah.
So, but I think once you work that out, you actually realize that female orgasm isn't that complicated. You just need to understand it. Mm. And then it's actually not very elusive, because, I mean, the power of the female orgasm is also, I always like to compare female orgasm and male orgasm like an oven and a stove. An oven and a
microwave?
gas stove. So, like, for men, when they get aroused, it's like switching on a gas stove where you spark the, that little gas thing, and then the flames come up.
Flames up, yeah.
For women, with their arousal patterns, it's like an oven. So it takes longer to warm up. However, women stay warmer for a longer time. So that means that they can have multiple orgasms if they want, because often their arousal patterns are they can keep warmer, right?
Sure.
So their arousal after an orgasm doesn't drop off the cliff. Mm. It drops down
a
little bit.
Well, a man wants to smoke a cigarette.
Yeah. It can easily come back up again. So
yes, you will 55 to 3 hours. Yeah. 55 minutes to 3 hours.
Because you're a stove. You're a stove.
It's kind of interesting, actually. Mm-hmm. That analogy
is perfect.
I can see. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's the issue, though, because once the guy orgasms, it's like the fire is immediately
out
to the point, like, turn off the lights, turn off the candles, everything, and no light at all, no heat, no light. Mm-hmm. Like, please, if you could even turn away, that kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm. With females, you put out a candle, and then that's it,
and if you have any sort of light source, you're like, blackout curtains now, right? But with female, you're right, because then there's a little bit of cuddling and this and that. With the guys, like, I don't understand what this needed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you if you wanted round two, you could, and you just kept it going, a woman would be up for it most of the time.
Well, for anyone who believes in intelligent design, this already is another debunking of, like, clearly someone wasn't really intelligent when they designed the system, where it's like, you're the flame and you're the oven.
Right.
This is gonna be great.
Okay, that was a real sneak peek. I didn't expect to actually learn something.
Okay.
I thought I would just have to buy the course to learn something away. So that was very useful. Thank you very much.
Well, you know, any of our listeners tonight, maybe when they are cooking their dinner, that flame might arouse someone and be like, hey, this is
working. We do
for
actually
me.
Have questions. However, I hate to do this. We're out of time. So the questions, we will do them on the Patreon.
All right.
We'll just finish this recording, go on the Patreon, patreon.com/ohopod, and ask you some spicy questions from some of our listeners. But we're still going back to the course. So last question, how did you decide to work with Hello Nancy?
Mm-hmm. I think, Hello Nancy, I really think that I chose to work with them because our visions were very aligned. Mm. And they are a sexual wellness brand. They have... they sell toys, essentially, but
everyone likes toys.
Yeah, but both of us, I think when I met the founder of Hello Nancy, I think we agreed that the real big opportunity we felt was in sex education, especially in Asia. And they are very much sort of a Hong Kong Asian brand as well. And so we really wanted to create something meaningful together that could be sold together with the toys. It can be sold by itself, but it can be sold together with the toys. Because often when you are... I myself used to sell toys, actually, back in the earlier chapter of my life.
Mm.
And I actually realized that there is no use selling somebody a toy if they don't know how to use it or if they don't understand their body. So this course is really the foundation behind that. And so there's a whole chapter in the course that explains, you know, each of the parts of the female anatomy and how to pleasure them and how to pleasure each part. And then gives sort of like tips and tricks for self-pleasure as well.
So one last dumb question. Mm-hmm. Do you have a downloadable PDF to the map to where to find the G-spot?
oh my gosh. No. That would be another sneak peek. Yeah, exactly. But yes, that is in the course.
Oh, there you go. That is in the course. Oh man, this course is for every guy.
But nice. It's not a downloadable map.
Fair enough.
In the myths and misconceptions.
Yeah. Right. There we go.
Chapter.
Just to give you a sample of the questions we already have.
Yeah.
One is, the first one we got was, what is your favorite kind of porn websites that are not mainstream?
Because
I think they feel like you would have some cool secret website that you can share with us. And the other one, which I think is really funny, totally real question, is how do I convince my girlfriend to invite someone into the relationship?
To what? To invite someone into
the
relationship?
To bring someone into the relationship.
These are great questions. Okay. Hey, look, I get these kind of questions all the time over dinner.
That one made me laugh because it sounds like it's from like me or someone. Is like, totally from a listener.
My friend wants to know.
Question. Yeah. But yes, we're going to discover these and a couple more on the Patreon. Sarah Tang, thank you so much for joining back on Ho Hong Kong. We'd love to have you back more often. Mm-hmm. People know where Vivek lives. Now they will know where you live too. You live like 30 seconds away from where we record. Nice. So please stop by more often.
I should.
Other than that, how do people find you online? Aside from the course, which will be in the show notes, how do people find you online?
You can find me at sarasense.com and follow me on Instagram at HelloSarahSense. And you can also tune into the Better in Bed podcast. And as you know, the episode on sexual fantasies, if you want to hear Mo and Andy.
Cut that. Forget about this part.
I can't remember which episode number that is, but that's a fun one to listen to.
It is fun. Jokes aside, it was really fun. And I would still talk about it sometimes. About how, because it was also like COVID time. We were both sitting on your couch like too scared.
I know.
Like chickens. And you're sitting on the other side. It was really fun.
Yeah.
So go back and check that out as well. Thank you so much, guys, everyone. Join us on the Patreon. Bye-bye.